Hello, welcome back to another week of the Multifaceted Athlete. This week I'm here with another guest. I had Sarah Hole on the podcast today to talk all about how she got to where she is today. She just started running 2 years ago and since then has run her first ultra very recently with goals of doing a 100-miler further down the line. And she's also pivoted her life to owning her own business, her own coaching business. So very excited for you to hear my conversation with Sarah. It was a lot of fun. There's a lot of tangents and I think you're really going to enjoy it. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Sarah. All right. Welcome back to another week of the Multifaceted Athlete. This week, I am joined by another guest, Sarah. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kelly. Excited to be here.
Yeah, super excited to chat. I want to dive into your first ultra experience because we all know I love ultras around here, Bermuda Life, and how you got into coaching and everything. But with most of the guests, let's start with when you were a child, what did you like to do? Were you into sports? Because I know you started running 2 years ago, but back then, what did you like to do?
I was not a very athletic child. I definitely spent a lot of time pretending to play sports. Like I would be on the soccer field, but instead of going after the ball, I would chase a butterfly on the soccer field. So I was very in my own world. I like to play outside. I like to be in nature. I would make little houses and furniture and pieces of art out of like mud and sticks and flowers and stuff that I would find in the yard. So I loved just playing with things in nature that I found art that was big. Definitely was an artsy kid. So did a ton of arts and crafts. Really, whatever I could get my hands on, anything creative related, and of course, American Girl dolls and Barbie dolls. Ooh. I loved dolls, and I would make little food for them. I would make it out of paper and clay, and yeah, so just kind of lots of crafty stuff. And wasn't great in the organized sports, but I did love swimming, so there was that, yeah.
So then what made you want to try running once you got around to trying?
I feel like it was just kind of a random day that I was thinking to myself, I feel like going out for a run. It was just an urge that came over me, you know, that we all sort of have that as humans. Like, what if I just go out for a run, you know, because it's sort of something that we can do and it's something we see people doing all the time. So it felt like a really random decision that sort of just ended up becoming something way more than I expected it to be. But I just got into it because I was thinking, well, I need to work out. Maybe I'll just go for a run. And yeah, I had horrible running form and I couldn't really run for more than a minute at a time. But that's how I got into it. Yeah.
So the first run, what made you want to keep doing it? Because I feel like there's more than two types of people, but with running, I feel like there's two types of people. The ones that try their first run and they're like, this is awful. I'm never doing it again. And then those like us who like do their first run, like that was awful, but I'm going to keep doing this for whatever reason.
You know, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it was, but I think a big piece of it was my fiance. He is a very gifted athlete. Total jock, you know, college athlete, and just one of those jerks who is good at every single sport they pick up on the first try.
Yeah.
Hate those people. Yeah. But he was really, you know, into lifting weights and going on runs. And I guess I just sort of, it rubbed off on me. He was a good influence on me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I want to be able to go on runs with him and do sporty stuff. So I think that was a big part of my motivation, is that I wanted to be able to keep up with him and, you know, be able to spend time with him in that way, in more of a fitness way. But I also think that, I don't know, something about it just, I liked the challenge of it. I liked being outside. I liked that it made me feel really calm afterwards. You know, it gives me a lot of emotional sort of clarity and level-headedness. So I wanted to really, you know, latch onto that feeling and keep trying and see how, if I could get better.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially the part you said about liking being outside based on what you enjoyed doing as a child, because I feel like that never really goes away. And running is a great way to foster it, especially once you get onto trails And then it's totally basically just like chasing butterflies, but harder.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
It's a lot more sticky carbs. Well, actually, maybe that didn't really change from being a kid. Maybe I still have sticky applesauce and carbs. I guess trail runners and children playing in backyards have that in common.
Yeah, I've never really made that connection, but the amount of times my hands are sticky after a run just from opening gels and fuel or chews is a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Trail runners and small children, both very sticky people.
Yes. It is nice. Trail running kind of brings us back to that childlike feeling, because there's not many things in our adult lives that do that, especially like everything gets so serious once we're adults, you know?
For sure.
So in your running journey, when did you get into racing?
I got into racing. There was a local 5K, and I thought, well, I've been running a lot. I could definitely jump into this 5K and do really well. And it was just, I did not do very well. I thought I was going to run it in under 30 minutes. I think I ran it in 32 minutes, and I stopped a lot to walk along the way. Mm. But I had this feeling like I could definitely do a better job than that. So I went and I raced another one, and I paced myself a little bit better. And then I found out about, through my fiance, Drew, I found out about this 18-mile race. And I don't know what came over me. I think it was ignorance, cockiness, something, naivety, that I just thought, oh, I could totally do that and I would crush it. And we just started training, and I said, you're doing it with me. I made him do it. I looped him in, and we started training for it one summer, and we just started training for it. And I, you know, it was not a great training process, to be honest. It was, I had no idea what I was doing. I just sort of ran one extra mile in my long run each week. I only ran three, maybe four times a week. But we were doing it, and I committed to it, and I said, we're going to do this race, and it's going to be great. And it was such an obscure race, too. It's like 200 people, flat, straight, point to point, you know, coastal New Jersey. Just such a random race to pick. You know, most people are like, oh, I'm going to do the half marathon in my city that's got a ton of participants and is really well organized. I'm like, I'm going to do this obscure race that, you know, nobody cares about and is in a straight line with no elevation for 18 miles. So yeah, but we did it. We did the race, and then I was hooked, even though that race was horrible too. And then I finally had a good race.
I raced the Philadelphia Half Marathon, and that was a much better experience. I executed the race better. I started to really learn more about training theory and how to execute an event like this. And by then I figured, well, if I could just keep improving this every time, then what else could I do? And I started to find out. I did a marathon. I did another marathon. I've done a third marathon. And then I did an ultra marathon.
That's so many races in such a short period of time.
It has been, yes. But it's been fun.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like racing is really fun, especially just giving you a target in training to look towards, especially on the hard days. In that 18-miler, if you can remember, what were some of the biggest mistakes you made?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think the first one was not practicing my carb load before the race. So I had been eating, you know, a lot of pasta or pizza or whatever the case may be before my training runs. But I did a full 3-day carb load where I, you know, did a ton of research on all these low fat, low fiber, high carb, high protein foods, and basically just revamped my entire diet for 3 days leading up to this race and completely shocked my microbiome because I felt so sick the whole race. Ooh. I just had like sloshy stomach and just did not feel good. So that was a big mistake. My other big mistake that I made was not really tapering properly. I didn't really know that much about a taper. I tapered a little bit, but I was still running really fast up to race day. That was another mistake I made, is I pretty much just tried to run as fast as I could in all my training runs all the time. Mm-hmm. And which is a very beginner thing to do, but it doesn't yield the best results. So those were the top mistakes I made, I think. Oh, and going out too hot, just to add insult to injury.
I feel like that's one of the mistakes that's hardest to get away from.
I think so. I definitely have to do a pace check when I'm heading out for any race and just keep an eye on my watch in the first 2 miles to make sure that I'm going out smooth, because the adrenaline really does kick in.
Yeah, especially after training solo for so long and then being around so many people with the excitement, and you're just like, I got to go with them. But
exactly. But yeah, don't do it. Don't do it.
No,
don't do it. It's not worth it.
No. Unless, like, you want to do that just to see what happens, then.
Well, God bless whoever's doing that intentionally just to see what happens.
Yeah, we would not.
More power to you. No, definitely not.
Yeah. So, did you have any experiences before you started running similar to, like, you said you ran your first 5K and then you're like, I think I can do this better and I want to try to improve. Was there any other areas in life, like in your creative side, that you were similarly, like you try something, then you're like, I think I can do this better. And that drives me to want to continue it.
Definitely with baking. I like to make a couple cakes every year for birthdays or just for special occasions. And it's difficult to make a cake from scratch. You have to do the right steps, so it's not impossible, but I find that it's difficult. There's always a little something that trips me up, and I really enjoy elevating my cake baking skills every time I go to make another one from scratch. Definitely have gotten a lot better at frosting them, making the frosting smooth. You can you can sit there and just re-go over the same spot for hours. It's crazy. And it takes me 3 days to make a cake because I will make the layers and then I'll freeze them and then I'll crumb coat. I'll do all this crazy stuff. So, that's the first one that came to mind is baking.
That's so cool. So I don't know if you know this. Well, you probably don't know this part. My first job was at Baskin Robbins and I made the cakes. So you talking about icing the cakes. Yeah. It's, you can spend a lot of time trying to make it perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. So you get it. You know the rabbit hole that I'm talking about when you're just sitting there and your back hurts and your arm is covered in frosting and you're like, just let me smooth this little spot.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially I always liked round cakes because you can it's nice and smooth, but yeah, the sides can get, uneven and then you're like, I'm just going to keep going. And yeah, it's hard to.
And then you've scraped away all the icing and then you start from scratch again. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially for ice cream cakes because they start to melt. So you're really on a time crunch.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even think of that. That's so stressful. I haven't tried an ice cream cake yet. I think I need to make a couple more cakes before I graduate to that level.
Yeah. I would recommend not doing ice cream cakes unless you are in a facility like Baskin Robbins where that's they have the correct tools to cut the ice cream. And they have
It's tricky.
Yeah, mostly because they have the big ice cream containers and then you just take it's not a wire cutter, but just the wire. It might be a wire cutter. I don't know. The wire and you just cut the big thing. None of us are buying ice cream in that size.
Right.
No one's probably.
You have to thaw it and lay it out. I get what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you'd have to put it in a mold first and then.
Right. That's exactly. You'd have to put it in a mold and not let it melt in that amount of time. That would be a whole thing.
Yeah. But maybe one day that'll be your challenge for a cake.
I'll let you know when I do, Kelly.
Okay. That was a fun tangent. Where were we running wise? Okay. So you ran 3 marathons and then the ultra. What drew you to the marathon distance?
Just thinking that if I could run an 18 miler, there's no reason why I couldn't run a marathon. I think that was it.
That makes sense. And then why 3? Yeah. Did you really enjoy the first?
I really enjoyed the first one. I had such a great race. It was one of those every single thing went right that day type of races. And I felt like I had never really had that before. And I have just spent so much time chasing that feeling ever since of that perfect golden race. And I think I had a pretty darn good race at Philadelphia Marathon. And then the last marathon I did was a training race for the ultra. So I ran the slowest time I had ever run because I just wanted to kind of keep the heart rate low, stay in zone 2 and get the stimulus in.
That makes sense. And then I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, that your logic for going up to the ultra was similar. Like if I can do a marathon,
I think so. Yeah, the logic for going up to the ultra was similar. And also I was just so captivated by all of the stories and the community and the culture surrounding trail running. And I really wanted to get me a piece of that. You know what I mean? Yeah. I wanted to get a piece of that. I wanted in on the action. I wanted to see what all the magic was about. I wanted to run those flowy trails and see the beautiful scenery and the amazing community. And I must say, my first ultra trail race did not disappoint in any of those aspects.
How did you first learn about ultra running and the community and everything? Because I feel like it's still very niche and totally you kind of niche. Have to like seek it out. So I'm curious, how did you stumble into
it? I found out through the Some Work All Play podcast, Megan and David Roach's podcast, because Megan is my coach because she used to be my babysitter when I was a little kid. We were neighbors and I found out about ultra running through their podcast and I was so captivated with this idea. I'd just blown away that people are capable of that. And I felt pretty certain pretty soon after hearing about ultramarathons, I knew that I wanted to try one for myself. And it didn't take long to come up with the goal that I want to run a 100 miler before I turn 30. So I've got just over 5 years to make that goal happen.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Do you...
Scary too, right?
It is scary, yeah. I mean, 100 miles is really far. Do you have a 100 miler that you would love to be your 100 miler?
Western States. No, just kidding. Javelina, maybe. Javelina 100. That one I've heard really so fun. Many good things about Javelina, and it seems like a good first ultra. But I also like the idea of a big loop or just a point-to-point. Like I think Cascade Crest, that one's in the Pac Northwest, right? I love that area. So maybe that one. Not totally sure yet. I need to get a 50 miler and 100K under my belt first and then see how things go from there. But yeah, it's scary, the 100 miler distance. It's definitely something I want to do just to be able to say I've done it and really want to see where my brain and my body will go when I push it to the absolute limit. Mom, I'm so sorry that you have to hear me say that again because I know that you hate it. And yeah, I'm just really curious about what I will discover about myself and what sort of power I will find within myself in that context, because I feel like that's what it's really about for me, is sort of accessing this power that you have within you to push through extreme physical challenges. It's what really captivates me, just sort of finding out where your brain is going to go in those moments and being able to find more within yourself. But it does scare the heck out of me. It totally scares me. I think it scares me that after a big race, like a marathon or an ultra, a really strong effort, when you're taking deep breaths, like your lungs will catch and you feel like you can't take a deep breath and your body just feels so destroyed. And it kind of, you know, you feel good and you feel strong and you feel good about the race, but it kind of scares you a little bit. Like, this is intense. Like, these are intense physical feelings. Is this good for me? Like, maybe not. I think that's something I don't hear people talk about a lot either, is sort of like how intense it is on the body and how that can be actually kind of scary, but also captivating at the same time. Because even when I feel that way, like when I felt that way after my first ultra, which was Black Canyon 60K, I still felt like I had a lot in the tank. Like I felt like I totally could have run another 20 miles. Well, run, walk. Yeah. Run is generous, but trail run, you know, could have run, you know, walk another 20 miles. Yes, thank you. But yeah, that was a long-winded answer, but
long-winded answers are the best answers. I mean, because you're here just to talk, so
yeah, that's perfect. Love. Yeah, and I love to talk.
I think that's interesting that you point out the toll it takes on our bodies after the ultra and how people don't really talk about it much. I feel like it always surprises me how like bad my legs feel the evening after an ultra, or the evening of. And then similarly, I don't know if you experienced this, I'm surprised by how quickly the legs specifically bounce back, like a day or two later. I'm like, oh, I'm walking fine. But then when you try to do your first run, it's like, no.
It's like you're running through ready. Concrete, right? Yeah. It's like you're encased in concrete. And just yeah. you feel like you're slodging through. Slodging? Is that a word? Trudging? Slugging? Slogging? Thank you. Slogging through a run. Yes. We got there in the end.
We did. I know. I think you combined sludging and slogging.
Yep. And trudging.
And trudging.
Yes.
all words apply. So in
– it doesn't feel good is what we're getting at.
Yeah. It does not feel good. Even when you've taken like ample days off, you're just like, wow, why do I still feel so shitty?
Right. Right. And then the damage that's happening on the cellular level in your body, even when it's not readily apparent when you're sitting on the couch resting, you really feel it when you go out for a run.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. During the 60K, did you have those moments where you had lows and you had to push through and you learned a lot about yourself?
For sure. I feel like the thing that kept happening to me is I would just sort of stop for a second and I would be like, gosh, my feet are killing me and I'm so tired. Like I just kept thinking like, I'm so tired. Like, can I just sit down for a few minutes? Mm-hmm. I didn't sit down the whole time.
Smart.
Coach Megan told me, do not sit down because you will not want to get back up. Do not sit down. Just keep moving forward. So that's what we did. But definitely had those moments of just feeling really tired. But it never crossed my mind that I would quit. That was never even mm-hmm. an option in my brain. Did not genuinely, truly did not occur to me, oh, this hurts and this is hard. Let's stop now. I knew that I was going to make it to the finish line. There was never a doubt in my mind. Whereas I feel like if I was running 100 miles and not 38 miles, there would be those moments of, I don't know if I can actually do this. And I want to know what that's like. I've never doubted that I'm going to finish a run, that I'm going to make it happen, even if it hurts and feels bad, it sucks. But I'm really curious about this place of where you genuinely and fervently believe that you cannot do more. And then, you know, you see runners and 100 milers who have been walking for the past 10 miles, like break into a sprint at mile 95. Like, where does that come from? And I want to know, and I want to feel what that's like. So I haven't gotten to that point of where you really feel like you're at the point of no return, but then you do return. I'm super curious about that like pivotal moment.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool way to approach ultras too, because it's kind of, as you go up in distance, I feel like it's inevitable that you're going to have at least one moment like that.
Yeah.
And I feel like it scares a lot of athletes that might happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. Like the way that you're going to feel in that moment is not going to be a good feeling, I'm sure. Yeah. But what I'm curious about is the way that you feel after that moment has passed and you didn't give in to those feelings of I can't do it, and you truly surpassed what your brain is allowing you to think you can accomplish. That is more exciting to me. That moment and that feeling is more exciting to me than the moment of how bad it's going to feel at your lowest low is scary. Does that make sense? I don't know if I articulated yeah. that well.
I think it made sense. It made sense in my brain.
Okay, great. Well, hopefully the listeners get what I was going for there too.
I know. I think they will. But yeah, I mean, I feel like you finding ultra running was meant to be just based on your mindset around racing.
Oh, yay. Glad to hear you say that. That's good.
Well, I feel like –
because I doubt it sometimes, you know, like it's hard yeah. to go out and train all the time. I definitely procrastinate oh, yeah. my runs sometimes, and it's just like I question why I'm doing it often. So it's mm-hmm. nice to hear you say that. You know, it's affirming to feel like this is the right thing for me, even though it's really hard to keep going sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like that's really normal. You and I both work with athletes, and obviously we're athletes yeah. ourselves, but like the procrastinating the runs is so real, especially, I don't know what it's like. You have better weather, right? Well, I guess the past couple months you've probably had better weather than we do yeah. here in Colorado. Not saying for those who live in like very cold climates that Colorado is bad weather by any means, but winter training is rough.
It can be tough with the snow. And like, I mean, I've lived in the Northeast the wind, yeah. for all my life until yeah. this year. So I know that it can be, you know, when it's like 17 degrees out, it is hard to get out the door. And likewise, when it's 90, you know?
Yes. I know. I feel like that's what we are moving. We're not quite 90, but it's heating up in a lot of places. And a lot of people I've seen are like, why does running suck? And I'm like, because it's getting hot.
It's getting hot, right.
Like, it's not you, it's the heat. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Weather is a huge challenge. I try to always encourage my athletes, though, you know, go out there and just face the elements and run in the rain, run in the wind, run in the cold and the sweltering heat and the humidity, because it will make you a stronger athlete and a stronger person. I'm so big on that for my athletes, is making sure, you know, I know it's hard. It's so hard for me too, but I have to believe that there is immense power in going out and doing these things that you don't want to do, both for your athletics and just for your character.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's just, I mean, I hate when people say this, but it is character building.
It really is.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be times within running, outside of running, where you're going to have to do things that you don't want to do. And it's getting yourself to do that can be a skill. So the more that you flex it, the better you'll get at it, or like the less you'll be resistant to it, I guess, the better you'll be able to handle it too.
Right. Exactly. It's that resiliency. And that's really what you're going to call on in, you know, in those moments in an ultra or a marathon or a half marathon or hell, a 5K. Ugh. I recently learned that your favorite, was that you? Is that your favorite distance is a 5K on the road?
I like the road 5Ks and trail 50Ks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is insanity. 5K is like 3 miles at suicide pace. You just feel like you're going to die the entire time. I mean, yeah, but that's the moment when you're going to be digging into. I was the one who got up every day and ran in these conditions where I didn't want to. And I want to sit down on the side of the road and heave and catch my breath right now, but I believe I can do more because I've proven that to myself already. Like, I think that is critical.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I'm curious, why did you move to Bermuda?
So my fiance works in a very niche industry called reinsurance, which is insurance for insurance companies. So think when you have a big hurricane in somewhere like Florida and an insurance company can't pay out all the losses because there's so much damage, they would go bankrupt if they tried to pay out all the losses. So they have reinsurance. They have companies that insure them. And reinsurance companies are insured by something called retrocession, which is a whole other tier. And then if I'm not much mistaken, retrocession companies insure one another and they work together to allocate risk across the world so that everybody's covered at all times, basically. And oddly enough, Bermuda is the reinsurance capital of the world. So I think it is because of the tax benefits for companies and individuals working on the island. And my wonderful fiance Drew sort of shot his shot and went out to this company, and they were looking for somebody with many more years of experience than he had, but he, you know, made a really great impression, interviewed well, he's ambitious and curious. So they took a shot on him and they said, all right, we're going to bring down a 25-year-old with 3 years of reinsurance experience for this big position. And he's been crushing it. But I can't work here. I can't get a work permit. It's very difficult for expats to get work permits because it's a small island with a small, you know, a population of 60K. That's it. And if there were expat American, British workers, et cetera, coming into the island and could just go apply and get hired at any job, then the people who are Bermudian, born and raised here, would have a really hard time getting a job. So they're very protective over the job market for good reason. So I can't really get a work permit here. So I had to quit my job in interior design. But I had been coaching athletes pretty casually the whole summer before we moved. We moved in November. And I just decided, well, I've always wanted to be my own boss anyways. And I'm loving coaching athletes. It's really fun. And it's really fulfilling to work with individuals and watch them accomplish goals and get to be a part of that journey. So I just decided I would take it full time. And because I can work remotely, I can coach clientele anywhere as long as they're not in Bermuda, as long as I'm not disadvantaging a potential Bermudian running coach. I can coach anywhere. So that's how I ended up here. Yep, because my awesome rock star fiance's job and my desire to do my own thing anyways. I always knew I wanted to do that. So it was kind of a perfect setup for us. And we also always thought, you know, we were both born and raised on the East Coast and we're comfortable in good jobs on the East Coast, you know, both relatively recently, recent post-grad. But we had this moment of we could live and grow up and die here and never move and live anywhere else and be anywhere else. And we both kind of decided we don't really want that. We want to go have a really different experience for a couple of years. And now I want to stay here forever. But we will be here for at least 5 years. He's on a 5-year work permit. So it was just, you know, a confluence of factors that really just came together in the right way in the right time, and we decided to go for it.
Wow, that seems like the perfect timing for everything. Do you miss interior design?
No, I enjoyed interior design. I really liked my colleagues. Mm-hmm. And I got to look at beautiful fabrics and, you know, furniture and go in these really luxurious homes in a very wealthy area of America, work for some really high profile clients. So it was a great experience. But bottom line, I did not enjoy being in an office setting. I, you know, 85% of my work was computer work, spreadsheets, pricing, tracking orders, you know, is this carpet coming to the carpet installer? Is the carpet installer coming on time? Is the furniture coming after the carpet? Oh, it can't come before, intercept it. A lot of that type of stuff. Yeah. I don't miss it because I did enjoy working in an office where I didn't have the flexibility and freedom to set my own schedule. I just think I really have always wanted to work independently. But yeah, so no, I don't think I've missed it a single day. I'm grateful for the experience. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Loved my colleagues, loved looking at pretty stuff, but it just wasn't really the right fit for me in the end.
That makes sense. The main reason I asked is because interior design, very different from run coaching. So yes. It's quite a pivot.
It is quite a pivot. It's crazy, right? But I still like doing design work. I designed stickers for Grayson Murphy for her training log and planner. Mm-hmm. I just designed my wedding invitations. So I still love doing design work and am actively looking for ways that I can incorporate that into what I'm doing with running and with coaching in the future, because that's a big part of who I am. And would love to figure out how to, you know, monetize that in a more sustainable way in the future. So definitely still doing creative stuff all the time. And baking cakes.
So did you go to school for like graphic design? Was that how you got into the design field?
I went to school for studio art and government. Okay. I was a double major. So studio art, I always knew I wanted to do. And government, I just picked because I was interested in politics and I wanted a little more breadth in my education. I didn't just want to be going to drawing class all day. So I wanted to really work on good reading and writing skills. And I went to a small liberal arts college. So that sort of joint major move made sense. Like our classes weren't super niche down. We got to take classes in a wide variety of disciplines. So that's how I ended up doing that.
That's so cool. Yeah, I feel like the design skills can be useful, maybe not directly applicable in a running coaching sense, but like since we are our own business owners, we have to have like a website that looks pretty, a logo that looks pretty.
Right.
All social these aspects. Media.
Yeah. Yeah. All this stuff for sure.
Yeah. So how did the idea of coaching come around? Did it just kind of organically happen when someone saw you training and was like, hey, can you teach me?
Pretty much, yeah. That happened with my best friend who wanted to run a half marathon. So I started just with her for free. And then I advertised on my Instagram page, hey, I'm coaching for free now. got a couple more people on, and then I started to feel like I'm doing a pretty good job at this. And, you know, I feel like I'm getting more confident and I know what I'm doing. And so I'm going to start charging people and offering a better product and trying to level up my services, which I've done through the Coaches Collective. That's how I met you, of course.
Yep.
To those who don't know, Kelly and I are both in Dr. Laura Pence's Coaches Collective, and that has been a great group. So big plug for that.
Yes.
And UESCA coaching cert, and just doing everything I can to take it to the next level and, you know, give my athletes a better experience.
Nice. That makes sense. I feel like that's a pretty common pipeline for a lot of coaches. Just like you do the running yourself and then you learn how to train for kind of like your own benefit, or you like pick up on training along the way. And then other people are like, hey, friends mainly, can you help me too?
Yeah, exactly. And you sort of just fall into it and you realize that you enjoy it and that it's fulfilling. You know, you brought up that difference between interior design versus run coaching. And yes, they are so different. And I feel like one is vastly more fulfilling for the other, because in one of them, I'm helping somebody break through their, you know, doubts about themselves and achieve new heights in what they thought possible for themselves, mm-hmm. and really changing their life. And in the other one, I'm buying, you know, helping install a $40,000 rug for somebody who's already insanely rich. I'm just like, like, it's just not turning the needle for me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people that go into working for themselves or starting their own company, whatever it may be, have had similar feelings, just like working in corporate. Like, what am I doing to help an individual, the world, whatever matters to us? Like, making a corporation money or like doing stuff for insanely rich people, getting them a rug isn't it.
Right. It's just not turning the needle for me. And, you know, all respect to those jobs and to people who work in corporations. I mean, my fiance works in a corporation. He's a total boss, and does a great job at it. And it's just not for me. And I think that people who like that setup and they like the structure of it and they like working in an office should feel very empowered to pursue that path. But I think for somebody like me who just does not feel like an office job is the right fit, you know, if you're listening and you're out there and you feel like you want to do something more creative or something that's going to benefit others in a more direct way, you know, I hope you feel empowered to do that, because not everybody has to have that traditional office job in that setting. You know, it's not impossible. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels like it's impossible to build your dream life or your dream career. And, you know, it's not easy. I'm certainly not, you know, financially in the same spot that I was when I was working in interior design. I'm certainly not an overnight success ramping up with tons and tons of athletes and, you know, famous on Instagram getting brand deals, but it gets there. You need to have a relentless belief in yourself. You need to have patience with the process and with any potential self-doubt you'll have. And it gets there, you know, you just have to believe and you have to keep stacking bricks in the wall and chipping away.
Yeah. And as you were just saying that, it just like comes right back to running. That's basically what we're doing, training for races and these big, scary goals that we don't know if we'll achieve. It's like, you got to keep believing and keep stacking the bricks in your daily training and hope that it pays off on race day. And if it doesn't pay off on race day, there's always another race ahead.
Exactly. And it will, you know, you just have to be patient with mm-hmm. running and with business. Like, these things happen on a scale of years. And when things feel like they're quiet for 3 months or for 4 months or six or a year, you know, it doesn't mean that it's going to be forever. Like, keep believing in yourself, keep stacking bricks in the wall. It sounds so corny, but it really is the truth. It really is the truth that if you just keep with that persistence, you know, and that's, I see that in running. I see that in business. Like, I've just had a double boom in running and business, I feel like, because I wasn't really noticing my progress and feeling really slow for a while. And then all of a sudden, just, you know, the past 2 days, I was running at a pace way faster than normal. And my heart rate was way lower than normal. And then in business, I didn't get any coaching inquiries for 3 months. It was bone dry. And I got like six in the past week and a half. Whoa. But if I had given up 2 months ago because it was quiet And because it wasn't working, then I wouldn't be doing those calls with those athletes. You know, I just feel like people need to hear that message of be persistent, because it is quiet and it is grueling sometimes. And I can glamorize like, oh, I moved to Bermuda and started my own company. Like, it is hard and it's a grind, but just keep believing in yourself, keep being persistent and taking the steps that you know you need to take. And things are going to happen if you don't give up.
Yeah, I think that's a really important message for every aspect of life. What has been the hardest part of shifting to coaching?
Just the quiet of, you know, working for myself and having the whole day in front of me and figuring out how to structure my day and when do I need to make sure I'm, you know, going out and training versus going to do errands versus going to see friends, so that I have an appropriate balance and structure of planned things versus unstructured time to work on my business. Because it's delusional to think that I could just wake up at 9 o'clock, sit down at my desk and sit here for 8 hours, take a break for lunch, and then go about my day. That is not how working for yourself works at all. I will work sometimes from like 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Sometimes I'll work from 9 to 11 a.m. You know, it's I think that has been really difficult, is figuring out how to structure my time is for sure the biggest challenge. And then also just that piece of like, nobody is coming to motivate me or tell me to get off my butt and, you know, get out of bed. I know you can stay in bed until 11 o'clock, but like, get out of bed and do your coaching course. Like, nobody's coming to tell me to do that. So pushing myself and, you know, really being intrinsically motivated. Nobody's going to yell at me if I don't show up to the office on time. I'm not going to get fired. So yeah, that is definitely the hardest part.
That makes sense. I'm curious, did you have to, or are you still dealing with, this is something I've dealt with shifting to working for myself, is like the expectations that I had in corporate, like of working the 8-hour workday or whatever. Have you had to deal with like breaking out of them? Were they ingrained in you before shifting, or did you have little enough time in the corporate world that you weren't a slave to them like I was?
Well, I wasn't in corporate. I was a small interior design firm. It's just about 10 people. So the expectations of 9 to 5 were certainly there, but I don't think it was as deeply ingrained in me because I was just doing it for a year. And I think I was pretty eager to get out of that structured 9-to-5 lifestyle. So I don't think it was, I don't think I had, that same challenge that you did.
That's nice, because it kind of sucks a lot.
I believe it. What is your work, Kelly?
I worked in data science.
Okay.
So in tech, yeah. But yeah, it's like, I mean, I feel like we talked about this a lot in Coaches Collective in some of our calls, just imposter syndrome, perfectionism, and feeling like there's a lot of, I still have a lot of like guilt if I'm not working 8 hours a day, even though I never, even in corporate, was not working 8 hours a day. But like that expectation is still there, like, oh, I should be doing something work related right now, not, you know, doing my training or like hanging out with my cats, whatever it may be, you know?
Right, right.
It's a very, very different world.
It totally is. No, it totally is. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. Like, I, as I said before, I don't really miss working in an office at all, ever.
Yeah, going to the office is very antiquated. And I wish wish the world would like catch up with remote work.
I know. Because you don't really, well, I don't know, maybe in some jobs. I think my fiance genuinely does work for like 9 hours a day of like productive work. But I feel like most people, listen to me, like I have no idea what I'm talking about. I shouldn't even say this. I feel like most people don't really need to sit at the computer for 8 hours to accomplish their tasks for the day.
For sure not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But again, I have no idea what I'm talking about. But some people do. Like, I think Drew, my fiance, is genuinely working that hard for that long.
Yeah. I feel like, obviously, I can only speak from my own experiences. I feel like some people, some fields are probably doing productive work for, you know, that long. But like working in tech, The people are not. I've seen so many people, like, when you do have to go into the office, they're just chatting with coworkers. And I'm not saying, like, chatting is a bad thing. But, like, when you're away from your desk for over an hour when you're at the office, like, we don't need to be working for 8 hours. And
– right.
Okay, I'm, like, kind of ranting now, but
– go off. I feel
I just get so annoyed because there's no incentive to be more efficient when you have to work for a set period of time, because you're going to have to fill that time. And one thing I learned in my first salary job in the pension field was, if I work faster, I get more work. It's not if I work faster, I get to stop working and enjoy my life. It's like, no, I have to do more than the coworker next to me who is 10 times as slow because they're not as efficient. So, like, why should I be efficient at my job? Especially because that's not what typically does – it's not what leads to, like, promotions and raises.
Yeah. So that's such a good point. That's such a good point.
Yeah.
Working for yourself is so nice because, like, I can sit down, deep focus, work for 3 to 5 hours, and then I have my whole day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and we get to decide – how much needs to get done today versus, like, what can wait until tomorrow versus, you know, what can wait till next week.
Versus somebody telling me to do it. That's the only thing. It didn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter who it is that's telling me what to do. Like, I could have the best boss in the world. And I had a great boss. I really did. But I just didn't like that somebody else was telling me what to do versus me telling me how – me deciding for myself how I want to spend my time.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that it might just be the people I'm surrounded by now, but that seems to be more common, which is nice.
Yeah. I think it's definitely the people you're surrounded with.
I have a very curated Instagram feed right now. Thanks to the Coaches Collective.
That's great.
Yeah. But let's wrap up. And since you've talked about coaching, who do you like to coach in case anyone listening fits that bill?
I love to coach beginners. I love coaching people who want to run their first half marathon or marathon. I especially love coaching those athletes who did not grow up as your typical jock, D1 athlete, superstar athlete, and are just sort of finding themselves in sport for the first time and, you know, struggling with self-doubt, self-confidence, wondering if you can do it. If that's you, if you are a newbie and you want to break into this space and feel really confident doing it, turn those doubts into confidence, then I'm your girl. You can find me at Strides of Confidence Coaching. My Instagram handle is Sarah Loves Running.
Super simple.
Yeah, Sarah Loves Running. But there's no H in Sarah. No H in Sarah. That trips people up.
That makes sense. Especially, I feel like, because your last name starts with an H. Not that your last name is in your handle, but if they were.
Yep. Well, only 70-some more days of my last name starting with an H. Excited to get rid of that, so.
Oh. What will your new last name be?
Tomlinson.
Whoa. That's a long name.
I know. It's better than Hole, though. Anything's better than Hole.
That's kind of true. Well, I'll link where everyone can find you in the show notes. But Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. This was so fun. And I know we, like, really bounced around a lot, but hopefully the people enjoyed it.
I thought I had a blast. Thanks for having me, Kelly.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.